also the institutions that made public submissions. Can we get an indication of who are here today? I'm not a black special here on my right. Is there any other stakeholder organization that's going to make an oral submission? So at this stage, it's only the Black Sash. So and that's the only item, honourable members, on our agenda today. So without wasting any time, I'm going to give over to the Black Sash to present their submission. You have 1 hour, and am I correct in assuming that it will be Ratula Bietman that will be making the presentation? Would you also introduce your colleagues with you to the committee, please, when you do your presentation? Is that fine with honourable members? Thank you. We'll grant Black Sash the opportunity to make the presentation, and then we'll have an opportunity for members to ask questions. Okay. Over to you, Ms. Bietman.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My colleague, Mr. Nyembezi, is going to introduce the team to the portfolio committee.
Honourable members, good morning. My name is Nkosi Khulile Nyembezi, and we come from the Black Sash, a human rights organization. I'm with Jeremy Shak here, who's in our legal department, and Ratula Bukman, who's the National Advocacy Program Manager. And as I have said, I'm Nkosi Khulile Nyembezi. We welcome this opportunity this morning to make a presentation to the committee. We became aware of this public hearing through an advertisement in the Mail and Guardian that appeared on the 1st of April. And of course, in that advertisement, there was a misprint in terms of the date by which we were supposed to submit, to make our submission in terms of the deadline in preparation for this hearing. And of course, it is just a word to encourage a better communication with stakeholders from Parliament, because as a result of the time constraints, it was quite strenuous in terms of preparing for the submission and the consultations, and we believe that there are some other, there may be some other stakeholders who may have wanted to participate but have lost the opportunity. And because of an ongoing relationship between Parliament and members of civil society, we just wish to encourage other ways of communication so as to get the word out. Otherwise, we do welcome the opportunity, and I'll hand over to my colleague Ratula to start with the with the presentation. And also just to say, in preparing this submission, as the issue on the table is something that we intimately involved with, we have been in consultation with our network organizations. We have made an input in this organization, and all some have endorsed it. The Treatment Action Campaign, the Patients Alliance, National Non-Governmental Organization, the Alliance for Children's Entitlement Social Security, that is ACCESS, and a couple of other advice offices. And so we hope that this input will contribute positively to this process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nyembezi. Honourable members, the Black Sash would like to make a submission, and we base our submission on two main areas, but when I was preparing this morning, I realised that our written submission should have addressed another issue, but I'm very happy that I can do it orally. So the first area that we will look at is the Bill's proposed definition of disability and its implications on those with chronic illnesses. The second part of it is around the reconsideration of the decision by the agency and appeals. And the third area that I've mentioned has to do with the granting aid, and I will deal with that, and I hope that I'll get reminded because I'm going to read from the submission. The Black Sash Trust welcomes the opportunity to make a public submission on the Social Amendment Bill. We make our submission in accordance with Section 57 of the Constitution, and as I said, the submission deals with the proposed definition of disability and its implications for those with a chronic illness, and then also in respect to the reconsideration and appeal. We believe that our comments raise crucial issues, which is, if not considered properly, will result in a severe consequence to the quality of life and the right to social assistance of tens of thousands of vulnerable people. But first, we have to deal with the short notice for public participation and poor intergovernmental coordination of this process. The Black Sash, we don't understand why the Department of Social Development Portfolio Committee is treating the bill with such urgency. We would like to get feedback from you. The notice to the public basically was about 14 days, and it was published over the Easter holiday, which allowed for not many people to know about it. We believe that the committee has not used the most effective and efficient channels to communicate and to reach the intended audience. The notice calling for written submissions and the advertising of the public hearings, when I was here at the briefing on the 13th of August, we got to know that it was namely in national newspapers like the Sunday Times, the Report, City Press, and the Mail and Guardian. And we would like to see this notice and to get this committee to rather reach the beneficiaries and applicants through community newspapers and community radio stations. Well, we believe that this would have meant that many of the beneficiaries, if you've done that, who receive currently a disability grant would have been reached, and that they would have made an input into this process. And then we therefore place on record our concern over the short notice period, and that we recommend to this committee to extend the deadline for written submissions as well as the public hearings to be advertised over community radio stations, in community newspapers, and that everybody gets sufficient time to respond to the implications of this bill, because they are grave. We also would like, once this written submission, a call for written submission and public hearings are going to be reconsidered by this committee, that such notice has a paragraph to communities explaining what the effect of the bill will be on their lives, meaning highlighting that the disability grant review process that will follow will have an impact that chronically ill people that currently receive the disability grant won't be included into the system anymore. We also note that consideration of the bill by other departments, such as the Department of Health and the Department of Women and Children and Youth, could also be affected by this proposal, and that they should also be part of this process. I will now pay attention to the actual submission, and in terms of Section A, we are going to look closely at the proposed definition of disability and our understanding as a human rights organization of what the department envisage, but what is left out with this vision. Black Sash has for many years expressed its concern that there has been no agreed definition of disability or consistent application of a standardized tool to assess disability. This has subjected many of our clients to the discretion of medical practitioners and officials, which contradict the basic principles of administrative justice. And we can understand why the department is putting forward a proposal of defining what disability is in conjunction with an assessment tool that would do away with this discretionary power that has had dire consequences for people in the past. But we, however, are very conscious of the possible implications of this reform for people who are chronically ill. Many people with chronic illnesses will inevitably be excluded from this vital income support with the application of the harmonized assessment tool. The Black Sash is deeply concerned at the negative impact that this will have on individuals and households battling the dual challenge of poverty and illness. For many years, thousands of people who have chronic illnesses, notably HIV and AIDS, have been provided with a disability grant by the Department of Social Development. In principle, we do not think it's appropriate for people who have chronic illnesses to necessarily be defined as disabled, as it both misrepresents these people's potential for health and works perversely against health-affirming behaviors. For example, most people can manage a chronic illness if they have access to medication and can maintain a healthy lifestyle. It's important to note that both these preconditions are dependent on sufficient income. It has been a reality of the linking of chronic illness to the disability grant that improved health of a beneficiary has resulted in the withdrawal of the grant and inevitable a return to ill health again. If the only form of income support available to people with chronic illnesses is one associated with deteriorating health, our society is essentially encouraging those who are ill to become disabled too. We argue that this policy trajectory will create an intolerable burden for individuals, families, communities, and on our health system. It's in this context that we make the case for the inclusion in the bill of a provision for those who are chronically ill to receive income support. We would argue it would be a grave error if the proposed bill goes ahead without a provision for chronic illness. Such provisions should provide surety that chronically ill people who currently receive the disability grant, as well as those who are not yet on the social assistance system, are considered for an alternative grant to provide some income support to cushion the blow caused by removing the disability grant. So in effect, if the bill goes ahead with the definition as it stands, it excludes chronically ill people, and at this point in time, there is no proposal for a different grant that deals specifically with chronic illnesses in the bill as it stands now. The dire consequences for thousands of chronically ill beneficiaries and their families cannot be ignored. Even though the longer-term effects on the thousands of people that stand to lose their disability grant is difficult to quantify, we know it will be extremely detrimental to both the beneficiary and his or her household. And we make the submission in accordance with our constitutional provision for Social Security, Section 27. Section 27.1 and Section 27.2. This section places a positive obligation upon the state to ensure that everyone who is in need of social assistance receives it. While we understand that the right to social assistance must be read within the state's available resources, we believe the matter of resourcing should be understood in the context of three major cost-saving areas. The saving of disability grant allocation can be transferred to chronically chronic illness grant provision. We believe there will be significant potential financial and social cost saving to the public as such a grant will reduce the number of people with chronic illnesses from becoming functionally disabled, unable to participate in society and depend on costly state institutions. The grant will also increase the life expectancy of the recipients, reducing the number of households and family members who would become dependent on the state with a particular consideration of the high number of orphans in our country currently. And then secondly, with regards to constitutional considerations, we have to look at the Grootboom judgment, which holds that government would be acting on a prima facie level in a regressive manner if it took away assistance previously provided to people. We hope, therefore, that if a disability provision is removed from those with chronic illnesses without being replaced with a reasonable manner, this bill would be contrary to the spirit of the constitutional commitment to progressive realization of social security. Further, in Khoza and others, the Minister of Social Development, the Constitutional Court reiterated that social economic rights are closely linked to the founding values of human dignity and equality. They are intersecting rights which hold a specific context of history in South Africa. The Black Sash is committed to ensuring the dignity of all living in our country and believe that this bill is at risk of undermining this key commitment for thousands of people who live in poverty in Africa, South Africa. On the 13th of April, during the briefing by the Department of Social Development to the Portfolio Committee, it was mentioned that the social sector cluster of the Forum of South Africans Directors General had proposed that there be an in-kind provision for people who are chronically ill, and that must be dealt with by the Integrated Food Security Task Team, and that the Department of Health needs to come in and look at how that can be delivered. We would like to caution you with regards to that process and with regards to that proposal. And I'm going to make a case about the importance of cash transfers and the problems associated with vouchers and the problems associated with food parcels to people as a form of social assistance. We propose a chronic illness grant in the form of a cash transfer rather than an in-kind transfer in the form of goods or vouchers for goods or food parcels. Cash transfers are an efficient way of providing assistance as they give the recipient choice. They also have fewer cost implications for the recipient, especially if the money is paid directly into the bank account. But most of all, it is one of the most dignified ways in today's economy to provide assistance to people who need it, especially if there's a constitutional provision protecting such a rights-based approach. Some disadvantages of vouchers include the cost of printing, distribution and redemption. Vouchers also restrict what people can get and may not meet their priority needs. If people do not want goods that vouchers are intended to buy or need the cash for other items, a parallel and unregulated market in vouchers may develop. Vouchers could also stigmatize recipients. Traders may be reluctant to participate and may make it difficult to redeem the vouchers. I deeply apologize. Food parcels, like one of the committee members said on the 13th, is, quote, a ready-cooked meal for officials and others involved in distributing it. the importance of cash transfers in the context of poverty and high inequality. South Africa has a large percentage of people who are chronically ill and live with HIV and AIDS, respiratory diseases, diabetes, amongst others. We believe a chronic illness grant will be an effective poverty intervention like the child support grant, and as such would make a valuable contribution to households that have been made vulnerable by illness. Small-scale quantitative research in KwaZulu-Natal currently suggests that there is a potentially very important relationship between antiretroviral treatment and access to social grants, specifically the disability grant. Social grant income helps to improve treatment outcomes, making the provision of treatment more cost-effective and returning people to normal functioning. Access to social grants in these households also have more widespread positive repercussions for other households, household members indirectly affected by the illness. It has many advantages for individuals and communities. Over the past decade, a large and growing body of research has documented the positive outcomes of giving social grants to impoverished and vulnerable South Africans. They are used to purchase essential food, clothing, improving nutrition, and basic human welfare. Households that receive grants are more statistically less likely to have malnutrition or stunted children. They are also able to access essential state services such as health clinics and schools. The written submission goes further, and it goes and look at recent research, but less well-documented research, findings that social grants also generate economic benefits for the households and the recipient, that they improve the recipient's ability to manage risk and insecurity, they encourage investment in saving, and they facilitate productive economic activities. In this way, social grants enable recipients to leverage their capacities and strengthen their livelihoods. While these positive welfare and developmental effects are associated with state transfers generally, they are more pronounced with the higher value grants, including the disability grant. In addition, in-depth research demonstrates the manner in which the positive effects associated with grant receipts are distributed within the households. In light of this recent research on the positive impact of grants, it's logical that a poverty grant provided to people with chronic illnesses would lead to an improvement in their nutrition, their personal care, and well-being, as well as enabling them to make a productive contribution to our economy. So, in short, we are saying that a chronic illness grant is a better intervention, it's a more dignified intervention. It's proven through research that it assists with an independence beyond the vision of a food voucher, giving people choice, giving people ways and means to assist and decide on what is important in a particular household, and that vouchers and that food parcels would not do that. And we strongly argue that this committee considers a grant instead of a proposal for food vouchers and for food parcels. Therefore, section 6, we've taken the liberty to insert a proposed definition for a chronic illness a proposed definition for a chronic illness grant that could be included in the bill. On page 9, section 6.2, we propose the following two definitions to form part of section 1 of the bill. For a chronic illness, and this is the World Health Organization's defining chronic illness, a chronic illness, an illness which is lifelong and incurable, yet which is controllable and manageable with treatment, and to include a chronic illness grant, which means a grant made in terms of Section 9 of the Social Assistance Act, which aims to enhance the quality of life, to enable healthy living, and to allow a chronically ill person to lead a dignified life. And then we further propose that Section 9 includes a chronic illness grant provision, and it be numbered 9A. And here we would like to highlight that the chronic illness grant should be applicable for both adults and children. And therefore, we propose that it reads as follows. A child or an adult is subject to Section 5 eligible for a chronic illness grant if he or she has a chronic illness as determined in terms of the schedule of chronic illnesses published and updated yearly by the Department of Health, and met the prescribed requirements for the means test and the income threshold. Section B of the submission. With regards to reconsideration of the decision of agency and appeal, the Black Sash has no real data setting out the exact reasons why applicants appeal. We therefore believe that the proposal to automatically and uniformly do an internal review of all unsuccessful applications before permitting an independent appeal would be a mistake. It would make sense in instances where people are rejected for technical reasons. They do not have correct documentation, such as identity documents, or where their application is not supported by appropriate medical or financial evidence, that in these cases, a person should not have to go through the entire appeals process, but should be referred by SASSA to an automatic review process, the reconsideration as proposed. We would, however, recommend that this agency's internal review process take no longer than 30 days, if the application has not been processed, or if it's unsuccessful within this period, then the applicant must still have the right to appeal. We, however, do not support a blanket internal process for those who have all their documentation and who have not been recommended for a disability grant by SASSA's medical practitioner. Should SASSA reject such an application, the Black Sash would recommend that the applicant be able to appeal directly to the minister without having to be subjected to an internal appeal review process. We also just want to highlight one area of appeals that has not been addressed by the bill that we are quite concerned about. We are concerned that the bill does not make reference to the existing and very serious current backlog of appeals. The Social Assistance Act 2004 requires that all appeals be heard by the Minister of Social Development or a tribunal appointed by the Minister. However, the Department failed to establish a tribunal when the Act was first introduced in 2005. There are literally tens of thousands of appeals still outstanding. In 2008, the Black Sash regional offices reported on their fruitless attempts to resolve the cases of clients who have waited for unacceptable long periods of time for hearing, for appeal hearing dates. And according to the department's own figures, in 2009, at least 47,701 people across the country are still trapped in the systematic appeals backlog process. We have been in contact with the department for over a year now and persistently engage them, and we have written letters and had meetings and so forth. We haven't had a desired outcome, and the Black Sash has now joined 24 disabled people from the Eastern Cape and instituted a legal action against the Department of Social Development. And we certainly would like your portfolio committee to play an oversight role in terms of this particular area and engage the department on this area and find out about what's happening and so forth and make sure that this area is addressed. And we definitely take this opportunity to highlight the seriousness of the appeals backlog issue at this point in time, and we urge the committee to seek effective ways to resolve this. We have just met the newly appointed official who is going to be in charge of this process, and we encourage that movement is taking place within the department, and we look forward to see what kind of solutions can be reached. And finally, the third issue that I would like to highlight, which is not in this submission, deals with the granting aid as proposed by the department in the bill itself. The bill reads as follows. A person is subject to Section 5 eligible for a granting aid if that person, and it's changed to, has a disability and as a result requires regular attendance by another person. Previously, it used to read, a person is subject to Section 5 eligible for a granting aid if that person is physically or mentally, due to their physical or mental condition, or requires regular attendance by another person. The word and has been inserted and the word or has been taken out. The effect of that is that the granting aid will only now be applicable to the disability grant, and it used to be applicable to older persons who required regular attendance by another person, and those people were able to get the grant in aid in addition to the older person's grant. But this, if this goes through like it is now, that will take away the previous assistance to older people, and that is unconstitutional, we believe, and it's an area that we need to focus on. Thanks. As you know, the Black Sash, as my colleague has said, is a human rights organization, and we work in the area of social security, and that's why we have made the submission today to this portfolio committee. And we thank you once again for having listened to us. Just briefly, just to sum it up, is that there will be an introduction of a definition for disability. It will be implemented together with the harmonized assessment tool that will assess people for disability, for the disability grant. And many people that receive the disability grant currently who are chronically ill will fall off the system. And in place of that, there is no proposal for a chronic illness grant. And that is what we bring forth to you to consider input, putting that into the submission. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pearson, and your team from the Black Sash Trust. Honourable members, it's your opportunity now to ask questions. Any questions? Ina Khafra? Mr. Makakula, Honourable Member Makakula, I've noted you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm having just some questions to Black Sash. they mentioned about this issue of the public notice. Actually, when you get this document, the department mentioned the number of days. Said this number of days was a public notice. And the number of days, either is the Easter holidays, is all under the number of days. That has been mentioned to the bill, that is for the public notice. And then my question now is why, when we go to the public notice, and then you said, no, this one is not the public notice days because it's the Easter holidays. Another thing, there is some other gazettes, newspapers, that has been published, this notice out. Are you sure about the gazette that you put it here, that are not part, or is not part of the public hearing, and those that the department has sent it to can reach those people? Because when you mention the public notice, are still for me are not that much locally, are not that much locally. The public notice that you mentioned, the public newspaper that you mentioned. And another thing in this chronic disease, I want your standpoint. Actually, for me, you don't have a standing point. You also advise to what the department will say, it will say they will do. And also you said no, they must get the grant. Actually, I don't get what the Black Sash want. I don't get what the Black Sash want, because you said this food voucher is not good. But we have to do the money transfer, a cash transfer, which is the alternative thinking, alternative reason, which you think that the voucher must not just go as it goes, must be happen this money cash transfer, and you go out little bit in the issue of the ground. And when you come down speaking, I was listening to you, the speaker said, no, you want grant. Actually, I want you to tell us what you really feel or you really want. Because really, if you have some options, indeed you agree with the department, we have to proceed, because you have that option. I'll pause from there, Chair.
Honourable Member Kenya, then I follow. Thank you, Sir President. Thank you for the presentation, sir. I think you're sorry of reflexes. Sorry. My question also links with Honorable Magagula. When talking about food vouchers and food passes to be removed, now my question is that for the time being, what do you think these people, by the time there is are still processes, what do you think the people can survive with? Noting that at the same time you are saying that they must get money. What if that money is not yet there? It is still under process, because, you know, I think it is better off to have something in place whilst you are waiting for the completion of the processes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks
Black Sash, for your concerns. We appreciate it, but what I want to emphasize on it, the problem there is chronic diseases, and that is what I have identified is the most issue on the presentation. So we as the social development, you will agree with us that people with chronic illness go and fetch medicines at the Department of Health, and they receive grant from the social development. And what we are saying, let us engage health so that this person, when he or she is in chronic diseases, because some of the people, you will agree with us, that they don't take medicine. They are only concentrating on the grant. And when you don't take the medicine, you don't get better, or that illness become worse. And sometimes we social development gives people those grants. You'll agree with me that there are lots of cases that we are handling on our constituency that sometimes those people don't even use those grants for the things that they are supposed to do. They went play cards, gambling with those grants. Even you can get some, we are having a problem with the grants of even children. Parents not giving children care with their social grants money. So what we are saying, let us engage Department of Health so that we measure our things correctly, so that if a person go to the Department of Health, the doctor, they check him or her if he's taking treatment correctly and giving himself, so that we don't just give money for people who don't care for treatment. So I think the food voucher was to is one of the things to reduce this thing of giving money and money go to something that is not meant for. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you, Plexish, for your presentation. But here, I don't want us to confuse issues in saying now we're concentrating in the chronic illnesses thing. And then here the bill talks about the disability. So if somebody has a chronic disease, that doesn't mean that the person is disabled. For instance, I won't go far. I will just refer to myself. I'm a diabetic for 10 years. That doesn't mean that I'm disabled. So now here the bill should be talking to I want to say, who is disabled? How do you identify a disabled person? And then what can be, what grant does he or she qualify in? So now to talk about chronic disease, I think it's something else. No, not the one that we are talking about. And another thing else. I see here, Black Sessions recommended, and the recommendations, I think I can say that they are good. But the committee, Chair, I don't know, will have to go through all these documents. We just cannot respond direct now, you know, about this. But what I wanted to highlight is the difference between disability and chronic. Thank you, Chair.
Is there any other honourable member? Or has since we have not? Thank you, Chairperson. I think that when it comes to Black Sash, their whole input that they're making to us is on chronic, because we don't have chronic within the bill itself. And I think that this is what we will have to discuss as a committee, because we're receiving inputs. And the thing is, just like us, I had the problem while we were in the committee, but the thing is, just we understand what it's all about, and that the House is going to look at that section, that people can become functionally disabled if they don't, you know, they don't manage their sicknesses. But the thing that this is our input, we'll make our inputs when the committee sits. There was no question, just a comment. Thanks, ma'am.
I think what the Black Sash is posing is an insertion in the bill for chronic illnesses. If you look at section one of the amendment bill.
The appeal of the Black Sash, the inclusion of the chronic illnesses in the bill. And I remember when we discussed this as a committee, we had difficulties in terms of looking at the word chronic. And when we're discussing chronic, we're debating whether, because some chronic illnesses are caused by mismanagement in the process of taking. I want to make an example of drugs. Sometimes you will go to the clinic, not in some cases the patients or those people that are chronic. I want to make an example because even that time I made an example of my child who is bipolar. And I wouldn't want my child to be called disability. I don't think she will be with us when she said disability. Disability because, or chronic because the disease is manageable. So those are issues that you need to look at. What makes a person to be chronic? In some cases, it's when they go and get medication at the clinics, you find that they don't find those medications. So when we had a meeting, we were saying it would be good that the health department also become involved in the process, not only social development, and look at what do we mean by chronic diseases. Because chronic, in a case of manageable, you cannot be chronic if you are being managed. But the case of when you don't get medication, you become chronic. So processes are not only around grants, giving out grants. A chronic is around also Department of Social of Health, sometimes not able to give people medication. So I want to make a recommendation, Chair, that says, even then we said we need to sit as a cluster, and social development, health department, and other committees that are involved in the because not this bill, disability is not only about social development. Also, the committee of women, children with disability, or women, children, and people with disabilities should be also, and also the ECG or OSW should also be part of this, because I feel that because they are the most chronic, if you do stats of how many people are chronic, would be women. HIV/AIDS is more on women than men. So if you don't get medication antiretroviral, you become chronic. So that's why I say this is a thorny issue. If you listen to the definition of disability, it's very difficult. Because not everybody will agree with me when I say if you don't get medication, you become chronic. So chronic is the word which Black Sash, when I was listening, is saying we should include it in the bill. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, Black Sash. But I think that chronic alone is a problem. Because you won't call my daughter chronic if she gets medication, because it's manageable. So now it needs lengthy discussions. The word only the word chronic, because you wouldn't say a person who is not taking medication, and if the person is taking medication, you would call it chronic. It's chronic because a person does not get maybe medication, or a person doesn't manage to buy medication if in a case where there is no medication in the clinic. So I feel that the word chronic needs lengthy discussions between Department of Social Development and Health. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other member, honourable member Dudley, if you'd like to ask a question? If I... respond to the Black Sash's introduction and the introductory remarks. The committee has, or parliament, not the committee, has published an erratum in the newspapers, and I think we've clarified the matter. So if you were here previously, you would have been in that meeting where we did clarify the matter on the extension of the date. And also where we said that it's Parliament's policy to advertise in these newspapers. I think the committee should take, is not satisfied with the fact that you've been in the committee where this information has been disseminated and you still put it in your submission. So the committee takes a dim view of this matter. But it's your free, you are free to critique the committee. And secondly, we are not the Committee of Social Development of the Department. We are the Portfolio Committee on Social Development of the Parliament of South Africa. So we don't pay any patronage to any department, especially not social development. I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek, no malice intended. The other issue that I would like to raise, I find the case that you've made for chronic illnesses very interesting, and especially the issue around the chronic illness grant. I know that it takes a lot of research to do that, but just off the top of your head, whether you've made just a desktop analysis around the financial impact or the cost analysis of the grant that you are proposing, that's number one, your chronic illness grant, what would be the impact. Now, the issue around the Bill of Rights, Section 27.1, the issue around the state must take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to achieve the progressive realization of each right on page 5 of your submission. Now, for every parliamentarian, the statement within its available resources is very important. Because as parliament, we vote on different votes, and we expect departments to perform and to spend the money that is allocated to them. If they do not spend in the allocated amounts, whatever sentimental or motivations they come to the committees are usually very tough on those departments. Because they also have your PFMA, and you've got a whole host of regulations. And we all agree the government is a highly regulated environment. Now, social security, social assistance, is one of government's biggest, I agree with you, poverty alleviation tool. I also agree with the fact that with grants, alleviates poverty within a household, and that fact cannot be denied. But you also have to keep track with the resources that government have. And And that is why I'm saying I would be interested to know, in terms of your cost analysis that you've done around the grant that you're proposing. Now, just to give us clarity around the insertion that you would like to have, and my mistake, I said it was Section 1 in the Principal Act of Section 9 around chronic illness grant. 9A, you said that a child or an adult is subject to Section 5, eligible for a chronic grant, and so on and so on. Why Section 9 and maybe not an amendment to Section 1 of Section 1 of the Act? So do you propose, in terms of your definition of chronic illnesses, that it should also be inserted in Section 1? Can you just give me clarity on that?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members. Just on the issue on the notice, would like to put it as a feedback process, because Parliament communicated to the public that there will be a sitting of this nature. And the message did go out, but did everyone get it? And did everyone, did it put anyone in a position to participate in terms of those who would have wanted? And so in terms of the feedback, as the recipients of the message, we want to convey that to you so that in future we can improve on the process, because we know this is a well-intended process, and having come to this, we thought it important to share our experience in terms of how we've gone through the process for your benefit, and yes, as a feedback. I mean, in terms of all the details, in terms of it being a public holiday and all that. And in fact, if anything that the Parliament, I mean the committee, can do in terms of broadening the process so as to encourage participation in terms of the way messages are conveyed, as we have seen and as also proposed, it would be quite a welcome step in terms of widening democracy. And then a point is made by members in terms of the question that came in terms of the chronic illness grant and of course the disability, and in terms of the definitions. I mean, I'm not going to be technical about it, but what we do know is the interaction of the issue about disability and the issue about chronic illness. What we see at the moment is that people go through the process, and while they have chronic illness, they are categorized as they get the disability grant. And of course, they get the disability grant because they become so ill that they cannot function or support themselves. And then after taking the treatment, then their health improves. And they are taken off the system, and that becomes a disincentive because they are in need still of assistance. And hence we are proposing that there be an insertion of the issue on chronic illness so that you do not have to qualify under disability. And all the pervasive incentives and question that goes in terms of people taking medicine, not taking medicine, and all of that can be dealt with by making appropriate definition and provision so that if you are ill, chronic illness, and then you need the form of grant, and then you take your medication, there is actually an incentive for one to take the medication. And then another, also a quick point in terms of I mean, people not using the grants for what they were intended and all that. I mean, we know that this Parliament talks, government talks of a developmental state, and also in terms of looking into the rights of the poor and the vulnerable. The Constitution enjoins the government to take progressive steps to realize their rights. It first grants the rights to say to anybody who is in need, and I think in a progressive definition of things, and with an eye view that talks to a developmental state, we need to put a shadow of meaning to say anybody who's in need, and that is why we have the means test. And of course, the body of evidence in front of us in terms of the usefulness of the grants, in terms of alleviating poverty, it far outweighs the few cases that we hear about in terms of people not using the grant for what it is intended for. Even in fact, in terms of the child support grant, it is supposed to be a grant that is given, and the state needs not to be paternalistic in terms of saying, you are poor, we will give you this grant, you go this way and not this way. We need to not see the provision of this grant as a manner that improves the dignity of the recipients and the manner that will assist the recipients to graduate from poverty such that they, in a long term, no longer require state assistance in a form of a grant. And I think in terms of the issue about resources that are available, we support this committee. And if this committee needs more resources, we stand with you in arguing for more resources, of course, appropriately used, because we know that we're coming out of economic recession and a lot of people have lost their jobs and they depend on these grants. We know in terms of the composition of these households that a lot of people who are supposed, able-bodied people who are supposed to work, they are not working, and they rely on the grant, the child support grant, the old age grant, and those are the most vulnerable members in that household. And so I think what I can say is that our submission, what it is intended for, is widen the social net so that those who are in need of the social assistance, they can be provided with. But of course, in terms of the modalities and how we interact, in terms of provision of assistance, in terms of provision of resources, we stand in solidarity with this committee. I mean, we have seen in other committees, how does Eskom get a bailout and other companies? How does a government decide to allocate resources? So we need to promote solidarity so that those who have can be in solidarity with the most vulnerable who do not have, and who are sometimes do not have the voice to talk on the issues. So in the ongoing interaction, we just want to put it clear that these are the issues that we are putting frankly on the table, and of course with a view that says we can see how we go forward. And I just want to hand over to my colleague just on this few specific technical issues.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, for the questions. Honourable members of the committee for the questions. With regards to the question, what does the Black Sash really want in terms of what we want to see in the bill? We certainly would want to see people who are chronically ill being provided with a chronic illness grant, and based on the submission and the reasons that we've provided. Also in terms of the fact that we're mentioning the voucher system and why we do that in the submission is so that we can highlight and place on record formally that this is being discussed elsewhere and that it is not a very dignified way of assisting people and therefore for that reason we are saying that we need a chronic illness grant. I agree with you. It is a discussion that needs to happen, and it's a discussion that needs to happen on a deeper level than as we sit here and debating it. And, well, what we're doing now is that we're putting it onto the table for a better and more in-depth discussion. But what I would want to urge this committee is to not get the bill passed and go through its parliamentary process without this being discussed properly and considered as an option properly. And that is really what we also want, Black Sash, is to have a consultative engagement on a proposal for a chronic illness grant that it doesn't go through with, the bill doesn't go through without this proposal being considered seriously and in-depthly. And that public participation with regards to that serious discussions needs to take place. And therefore, at this point in time, I would not suggest that an intermediate arrangement is made, but that the bill rather stands over until this discussion and until we thresh out the chronic illness grant proposal together. agree. It's a bit confusing. The bill deals with disability, precisely the definition of disability and so forth. It doesn't deal with chronic illnesses, but the implication of the bill adopting a definition has the impact on people with chronic illnesses. And that is why we are proposing, and that's why the submission and maybe other submissions that you've received deals with the fact that chronic illness and people who suffer from chronic illness are going to be affected severely. And that's why it's in our submission as well. So in terms of the word chronic, I've never thought of it in terms of how you've described it. We've just taken the World Health Organization's definition of a chronic illness and then used that as a basis of taking this debate forward. You make a distinction between people that receive chronic illness treatment for a chronic illness and that they're not chronic then after that. But that's not our understanding either. Our understanding is that you have a chronic illness, and with treatment and with correct diet, you maintain that chronic illness and you're a healthy, productive citizen. And that is what we want people to be. And we agree with you with regards to that. Yeah. Honorable Chair, your questions around the financial impact that such a proposal will have. The civil society can bring the principles and the proposals onto the table. And we do have broader ideas, like we've outlined in our submission, about where the money could come from. For example, we said that with the savings on the disability grant that the department would make in terms of allocation, and taking away the disability grant, that money can be used to go towards a chronic illness grant. Potential, and we look beyond just what the figures are. We say that there will be a significant financial and social cost saving to the public as such, if such a grant will, and as such a grant will reduce the number of people with chronic illnesses from becoming functionally disabled and then having to rely on a disability grant again. So, you know, there's a vicious cycle there that could happen. The grant will also increase the life expectancy of the recipients of chronic illness grants, and that reduces the state's responsibility having to look after orphans, for example. So there are various, and these are just three examples of how we have to start thinking about, not just the how much it costs right now, but the impact of giving the chronic illness grant, of what it will have on society later on as well. What happened was there was a basic income grant proposal once by civil society, and government had said, go back and come back to us and give us the figures and get economists to cost it. And a lot of effort has gone into that process. And in the end, civil society had spent so much effort and those proposals weren't taken up. We believe out of that process we've learned that it should not be civil society's job to do the nuts and bolts and figures and the down payment. We must raise the human rights impact that a particular legislative decision and legislative enactment will have on people. And we bring that to you. And we say this is what is going to happen to people if you continue in this particular line. And then we can discuss and engage and come to some form of agreement which will have a lesser impact. You know. So the debate is open. It's now on the table, and I think we need to have a broader process. I think we need to think about not taking this bill forward unless we have that broader process, and it can, with our help as Black Sash and the other organizations here, and we've talked to civil society, we can get together and we can take the process further with this portfolio committee, and that is what we also seek from you today. Thank you.
On the chronic illness grant that you're proposing,
Do you see it as being a temporary grant or not?
We don't see it as a temporary grant because people need to maintain a healthy living lifestyle. People will continuously have to maintain their chronic illness. A chronic illness in its essence is a permanent condition that you just have to maintain and in order to have a healthier lifestyle. So it's not a quick intervention. With regards to Section 9, I'm so sorry I didn't address that. Section 9 in the Act deals with all the different grounds. So we insert it in Section 1, which are filled with definitions, and then we have to have it in Section 9.
Honourable Member Tut.
Chair, I hear what the Black Sash is saying, and I like the term that you've used, but the bill deals with disability, not chronic. But I meant if you don't take medication, if you are chronic is chronic, it's for life. Yes, it's life. But if you don't take, I think that's what the bill is talking about, that if you don't take, let's say, medication, you do not become disabled. So we're looking at processes between you not getting medication in the clinic. I remember when DG was explaining this to committee, they were saying we should look at whether the clinics, that's why I was talking about linking with Department of Health. Clinics must make sure that they have medication, and then people must make sure that they get what they want so that they don't become disabled. So really the bill is dealing with disability, not chronic. So I hear when you say we need deeper discussions with other departments, but what I meant is that when you take medication, it doesn't take out that you are chronic, but you can, if you don't take the medication, become disabled. But that's the part that we need to deal with, that you don't become disabled because of not taking medication. That's what I wanted to explain, Chair. Thank you. Because it sounded like I say if you take medication, you don't become chronic. No, that was a mistake if I said so. If you don't take medication, you may be disabled because of not taking medication. Thank you.
A follow and then Kenya. Thank you, Chair. Black says, I don't know if you know that if a person has been getting grant for a chronic disease, some of them, they are coming back to the department saying, after receiving this medication, I will continue receiving this medication, but at least at the end of the day, I have found a job that will sustain me. You know that. I just want to bring that thing to your attention that during the process of giving people grants, they become so healthy that they even see themselves going to work for themselves, not depending to the grant. So I'm just saying that chronic diseases, we are taking it as you might get medication but not get well or be unable maybe to wash or to walk or to do everything. And that we are taking you from chronic to disabled. Thank you, Chair. That is what the point that I wanted to make.
Member Kenya. I think really there's a problem here. That's why we say the Department of Health must be part of this debate. When you are talking about chronically ill patients, as Honorable Tumeya just said, chronically ill doesn't mean that you are disabled. because it can have hypertension, it can have diabetes, it can have cardiac failure, it can have renal failure, but it can still work. So now it goes back to what you are saying, what we are saying, that even the disabled are not all categorized, because when they go to the doctors, that is why sometimes their application is being turned down, because disabled doesn't mean that you are not able to work. It is total, it's a total disability, that to be totally disabled when you can't work any longer. You can have disabled by having one eye, but you can still work. You can't be disabled by having one arm, but you can still work. So that is really not, I just want to ask you to define what disabled is also, because you can't disabled, but can do certain work without getting the grant by virtue of having ability to work. And also, we must also take into consideration if we can say that we must forgive everybody who's disabled or chronic the treatment, that means that it may be 50% of the population of the country. Can we afford, therefore, that I think this means that we can masturbate this, because how can we say 50% must go to the grants of chronically ill patients of the budget of the country, whereas there are those people who are in need? Yes, I can hear in the cases of patients who are HIV and AIDS, because mostly they depend on nutrition, they depend on, and mostly most of them, but even then they can work because they are not disabled. They are chronically ill but not disabled. They can be permanent but not disabled to an extent that they cannot work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to thank the Black Sash Trust for the submission. We still have quite a few submissions that need to be presented. Thank you very much for coming and the issues that you've raised. Thanks. Members, you can have a 5-minute party break before we resume. I believe NAPWA has arrived. They are here, so we'll also give them 1 hour to give their presentation. Members, 5 minutes means 5 minutes, which means you've wasted 2 minutes. We only have up till 12:30 in this venue, because you know the EPCs will resume at 2:00.
Thank you, honourable members. We'll now resume. The National Association of People Living with HIV and AIDS, Ms. Captain Talibo. Can they just identify themselves in the chamber? Are they in the chamber? They're not? Where are they? I've asked them to indicate where they are and they haven't done that. It's yourself. And anyone else? Are you alone, sir? Are you alone? Is there other members of the
Yes, they are not joining us.
Are they coming?
Yes, they are joining us. They were here, so they went out for it. But I can proceed.
Can we proceed with you?
Yes.
Fine. Okay. Over to you, sir.
Honorable Chairperson of the committee and the honorable members of the portfolio committee and everybody here, I would like to take this opportunity to greet the members of the committee and other stakeholders that are here. Chairperson, I have to start by making a serious confession that firstly, I'm coming from NAPWA, which is the National Association of People Living with HIV and AIDS, from its headquarters in Johannesburg. So the serious confession is that I think this is our first time coming to make a presentation in this format. So if there are some protocols that I will not observe, please forgive us in advance. The National Association of People Living with HIV and AIDS, NAPWA, has always advocated for a holistic response in caring for people living with HIV. In 1998, NAPWA realized that people were dying due to lack of life-saving drugs. Hence, it formed and was part of a national coalition to fight for the access to treatment, including ARVs. After that, NAPWA realized that many people who were receiving or were to receive treatment did not have access to food security. Therefore, many people living with HIV and AIDS started dropping out of the system because of lack of food. Chairperson, many people died not because of HIV and AIDS, but because of lack of both treatment and basic needs and services. And it is clear that HIV is harsh and brutal to people who are socially and economically distressed and depressed. Department of Health and President of the Republic and Social Development were approached by NAPWA since 2001 for them to respond to our call for social grants using different means. And indeed, Social Development agreed to our request because they started providing social grants to people living with HIV and AIDS. And the grant was providing a major relief to those in poverty. And one of the results was that there was an increase in the intake of ARVs and decrease in mortality rate of people living with HIV. Legally, we knew at that time that there was no, in terms of the government policy, there was no, people living with HIV and AIDS were not catered in the social security legislation. Recently, government introduced the city for count measure as a determining factor for one to be included or excluded from getting a social grant. If one city for count is above 200, your social grant would be cut. As a survival strategy, most people living with HIV, they stop taking their treatment in order for their CD4 count to drop less than 200 so that they can qualify for the grant. As we speak, there are many people living with HIV who are unemployed, poverty-stricken, and without food and basic needs. Through social grants, people living with HIV were able to buy food and subsequently able to take their treatment. This ensured a balanced life for people that are living with HIV and reduce HIV and AIDS related mortality drastically. Currently, most people living with HIV and AIDS are not even given proper notices for the cancellation. Because as it was said earlier before by Black Sash that a person will be getting a grant and a treatment and the CD4 count will go up. And the result of that is that the grant is taken away. And then in most cases, people are not even given notices. Or when you go to ask for an explanation, there are no proper explanations. This creates instability in terms of financial planning or life planning on the side of a recipient. Also, this is cruelty and it's a human rights violation to people living with HIV and AIDS. However, even if people living with HIV did not default deliberately, they could not take treatment on an empty stomach as they did not have access to food anyway. NAPWA has been engaging Social Development and SASA on a number of occasions around this issue. And SASA has told us that it is government policy that needs to be amended to allow the inclusion of people living with HIV and AIDS in the government social security. And they supported NAPWA in this regard. So this is why we are very pleased in terms of participating in this process. Because as we have realized that in the definition, in the current definition, people living with HIV and AIDS are not regarded as disabled. In fact, they are not disabled, as it has been said. So we agree with that. Now, but before we come to the issue of chronic illness grant, we want to state the fact that, firstly, in the country, the government is rolling out ARVs, and there is even a plan to increase the intake. So people are responding to issues of treatment very well.
However, the challenge is that the Department of Social Development is a huge weak link in ensuring that the people living with HIV, they live a better life. Because you don't need ARVs alone in order to live. You also need nutrition. And the social grants were assisting people living with HIV AIDS to get nutrition. Now, the current challenges in terms of social grants as they relate to people living with HIV and AIDS, that's number one. There is no national policy directive on this issue. And we hope that this hearing, one of the outcomes of these hearings will be a national directive on this issue. The second challenge is that different provinces are having different approaches on the matter. For instance, you go to Eastern Cape, in a particular district, or you'll be told that this is how they implement the inclusion or exclusion policy, and then you go to Free State, you find that it's different. The enrollment of people living with HIV and AIDS on social security system has been given to medical doctors who at times apply favoritism and solicit bribes from people living with HIV and AIDS before they register them to the system. Government through SASA is using medical conditions alone, that is City 4 County, as an inclusion or exclusion criteria. This has many limitations and inconsistencies, because you can have somebody whose City 4 count is 200, but that person can be very sick. And you can have at the same time a person with a City 4 count of 20, but that person, being very well and able to work. Now, the negative implications of government stopping social grants to people living with HIV and AIDS specifically. Number one is an increased death of people living with HIV and AIDS. Number two, decreased treatment intake due to the fact that the people cannot take drugs on an empty stomach. There is a huge scientific evidence that ARVs are dangerous in an empty stomach. Number three, people living with HIV and AIDS not having transport money to go and take their treatment in public healthcare facilities. I think this point also answered the issue of why we are objecting to the proposition of giving food vouchers or food parcels only, because people that are on treatment, they still need to go to get treatment in healthcare facilities, unless in each and every area in our country healthcare facilities were within the walking range, then we'll agree with that. Now, the other factor of stopping giving social grants to people who are HIV positive is the collapsing of support groups of people living with HIV and AIDS, as people cannot be counseled on an empty stomach or while they are hungry. Because one of the psychosocial interventions for people who are living with HIV in support groups, and in order to participate actively in a support group, you have to, you must have had food so that you can be able to concentrate. At times, many people need to travel from one section to another section, or from one village to another village, in order to access support group services. So our members, they are using the social grant money, for transport in those kind of incidences. And then increased incidences of suicide cases of people living with HIV and AIDS due to the loss of hope. There are many cases that we are sitting with where people will be promised that your grant will be approved next month, come next week, and so on. And some in the process, they even commit suicide. And one case in KZN was a case where when the money for that particular person was out, and then the official said, I'm going to give you half of this money, not all the money, and the person committed a suicide. The taking away of social grants to people living with HIV and AIDS will fuel poverty and hunger, as I've already stated, but also it fuels spread of HIV, as some people they tend to resort to risky lifestyle, including transactional sex. Government's ARV treatment is not sustainable, because most people living with HIV and AIDS take treatment and they put this treatment in their homes without taking them. So So Department of Health on this other, on this side is issuing treatment, and then statistics are reporting that government has got the best treatment program. But on this other side, people, they just take the treatment and place it at home without using it. One issue that the country has not done is to research on the reasons of the high rate of treatment non-adherence, which this issue is one of those. Government does not implement the food security component of the national strategic plan, because this issue of food security and social grants, as it relates to HIV and AIDS, it is part of the national strategic plan, HIV and AIDS national strategic plan. We are sure that with your vast knowledge, honorable members, you will know that nutrition is also medicine. So when government takes away social grants from a deserving PWA, it takes away preventative treatment as well. NAPA therefore requests social grants to social development and the committee to, one, to stop deregistering all unemployed and poverty-stricken PWAs on social grants, and to immediate and urgent re-registration of all those that have been deregistered. The standardization of social grant system when it applies to people living with HIV and AIDS in South Africa, to stop using CD4 count as a measure and a criteria for people living with HIV and AIDS to access social grants, but rather to use a socio-economic status as the main criteria for eligibility. The creation of cooperatives for people living with HIV and AIDS and unemployed people nationally is another vehicle to address this issue, but while people are receiving a social grant. As NAPWA, we support the chronic illness grant fully, because we believe that we don't need a special grant for people living with HIV and AIDS. And as we've already said, that the people living with HIV and AIDS are not disabled. So the issue of the social chronic illness grant will go a long way in addressing the issues of stigma, discrimination. However, as NAPA, we submit that any intervention should ensure that the amount for chronic illness grant is not less than 1,000 per month per person. Because already we hear that people are proposing 200 rands, 300 rands, and we're saying if we take into account of the uses of that, the benefits and what is going to be sort of done by that money, 200 rands, 300 rands is very little. The money is not only for food, but also for transport fee when people are going to collect treatment, as I've said before, for medical checkup, paying off electricity, and other basic needs. On this point, Honorable Chairperson, if we were to agree that people with chronic illnesses will be given food vouchers or will be given food passes, how are they going to cook that food if they don't have money to access electricity? Because on this other side, we will be faced very soon with the electricity hike. The chronic illness grant must cover everyone who deserves, and the government must make the eligibility criteria for chronic grants easy and clearer for people to understand. People should be empowered to understand who qualifies, so that it is not the doctors who control the process. So here we are advocating for government to have an active campaign to educate people so that they can understand and know if they are eligible or not. There has been an argument often advanced by those who are against social grants that grants encourage teenage pregnancy, people to infect themselves deliberately with HIV. While there is no truth to that, the importance of coming up with a social security net that covers everybody who has a chronic illness, rather than focusing on certain groupings, is to also precisely ensure that people do not put themselves in a danger of infecting themselves or getting pregnant in order to escape poverty situations. The cost of teenage pregnancy and HIV and other social is higher than the cost of providing a chronic illness grant. In conclusion, while the Department of Social Development and Government is dealing with this issue, and while the portfolio committee is going to go back and discuss, as NAPWA would like to put before the committee that please know that our people, particularly black people, are dying in numbers due to a weakened immune system caused by poverty and hunger, and HIV and AIDS adds to that. Government has to know that any treatment, particularly for chronic illnesses, works better with food. We hope and wish and request that the government to move with speed to address this matter, the same speed and efforts and the same resources that are put to push for issues like ARVs, male circumcision, and other issues. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nayasi. Honourable members, it's your opportunity now for questions of clarity. Please just be reminded that we will deliberate on these submissions at the later date in the committee. Honourable Member Gourmet.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, NAPWA. What I just want to put forward to NAPWA is that the members here are coming from the communities. They are just not people from the air. So what you're saying, I think we know. And as such, in some instances, we will argue issues and points that you are putting forward because we're living also with those people. Thanks for your presentation. Again, the first presenter at Blackfish, we would just like to have clarity, but we think we have to sit on your presentation and look at it. And as we believe that HIV and AIDS is everybody's business. It's not yours, it's not ours. We have to come together, all of us. And with your recommendations, I've just noted here, your recommendations, but we'll have to sit on them also. And then if we need to further meet you so that we can get clarity in some items, seeing that there are so many presentations to come, we'll check all what you're saying. For instance, if you're saying that it is untrue that people have been infecting themselves deliberately, you know, in my area, it is true. There were people who were going to the doctors to sell their blood. When I'm for to gihambe nomuntu afike pana sale gazi abe yimina. That was happening in Skatikala when the HIV and AIDS had a grant. But now we have also to check on what other avenues, what other resources can be used. Much as we are saying, the HIV and AIDS people, most of them are not chronic or are not disabled. But now there are sister departments with which the government, the Department of Social Development is working with. If you talk your culture, you talk the Department of Health, you talk the Department of Entrepreneurs and all those departments, they can come together with you when you are saying there must be cooperatives. There must be funded cooperatives for not necessarily people living with AIDS, because now it will seem as if we're saying they must be taken to a corner, a certain corner. But to the communities, there must be cooperatives which will assist so that our society do not depend on grants.
I believe why there is this bill is because we want to identify disability, chronic illnesses, and what assistance can be taken to the people who are needy. For instance, if somebody is living with HIV and is a teacher, then that person is getting an income. All of a sudden, maybe she becomes sick and she cannot go to work anymore. Then what should be done to those people? Much as you are posing your issues to the department, what is interesting me is that you also have recommendations. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Member Kenya. Thank you, Chair. Thanks also for the presentation by NAPWA. My colleague has touched on what I was thinking of. Here we must engage all the departments, including labor, because we are saying these people, some of them are supposed to work. So I think all the departments, and also must be encouraged, also as a cluster here, of all the departments to take this debate forward so that we can move. On the issue of teenage pregnancy and collapse of support groups, I think all of us here, it is our obligation to have monitoring strategies down there. The policies may be good, everything can be good, and the bills can debate these bills, but at the same time, what is important is what is being done on the ground at the grassroots level, where this is supposed to be taking place. As we say that there is the collapse of these support groups, who is supposed to see that those support groups do not collapse? It is all of us. I think we must disseminate everything down there. Even NAPWA must have also the structures down next to the people where they are, so that what we are talking about can be monitored. If we say people have got teenage pregnancies because they want to get grants, the support groups are collapsing, but there must be somebody who is responsible to see that at grassroots level, where our people are, there are monitoring strategies. And also, as my colleagues have said, here, we are in government, but we belong to those communities. We are politicians deployed here for the betterment of the lives of our people. We are concerned about the human rights, but at the same time, we are looking at how can we take these matters forward. Can the country survive if we say the chronic illnesses are going to get just at random? Let us not blanket this chronic illness. There's the resistance of blanketing these chronic illnesses. These chronic illnesses are there for all of us. We are here having chronic illnesses, but we are working. So maybe we must categorize these chronic illnesses to get this right. Let us categorize it. I thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Member Kopane.
Chairperson, my point has been taken. But the only thing what I wanted to address the Black Search and other organizations that were represented, the intention of the amendment of the bill, it was to minimize, one of the things was to minimize people who are fraudulently accessing the grant. We know from the, like my colleague has already said, we came from the same community. We live with them. We know what is happening. Most of the people who are presently getting those grants, the disability grants, or those who are claimed to be having the chronic medication, those people, some of them, like you said, they manage to go to the clinic, they manage to see the doctors and get the medication, but they don't take their medication. So what we need to emphasize here, as much as our people are having their rights, rights goes with accountability, they must be responsible. We cannot help people who want to be irresponsible about their lives. That's what we need to do. Like my colleague has already said, the issue of the grants, it doesn't only affect social development. Other departments must be on board, like they've already included. Maybe we need some sort of a platform again where all the departments, social cluster, we are going to sit together to address this matter. But we are not going to support people who are not taking their medication because they want to access the grant. Like a colleague of mine talked about monitoring. It's challenge, like you said, there are people who are receiving the grants. We don't even see those grants really reach the right people. So we need to have people like social workers to see that those grants reach the right people. as much as there are people who are receiving the ARV, but they don't take the medication, it's a challenge because we don't have nurse, community nurses to see that those people that are taking the medication. If you remember, well, some few years ago, when TB was still an issue, there were people, there were community nurses who would see that those people, they take their medication on a daily basis in front of the nurses. If it comes to a push, we have to do exactly with people who are taking the ARV. And the issue of food is for all the disease. You have to take your medication with food. But as I'm saying, it's a challenge to all the departments on board to come and discuss this. But we are not supposed to be seen to, you know, to promote corruption. So we need to stop that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Kupane, Honourable Member Twete, and then Fono.
Chair, I want to apologize to NAPRA because when we started, I went too late. I also want to thank NAPRA for your presentation. But I'm looking at page 3 on the challenges. And I want to say before I make my comment on page 3 that the intention of public hearing is to get the consent of the people, especially NGOs. What do they say about the bill? Therefore, even the challenges of NAPRA might assist us in terms of making sure that we invite other committees to be part of this, so that when we pass the bill, we make sure that every sector is looked at. I want to start by saying or echo what my colleagues were saying, that this definitely will need Department of Labor, Department of Justice, because they make the laws. They should be here. Also, I want to say, Chair, even interministerial should look at this bill. It's quite serious or quite thorny, I must say, and I'm saying it for the second time, that the understanding of chronic, because we have about 14 chronic illnesses. Maybe we might come to a point whereby we're going to discuss each chronic disease. If we talk about diabetes, what do we mean by that? If we talk about arthritis, because I think also the role which the Ministry of Health should play in this bill, I think I look at it as the people that's supposed to be also becoming part of making sure that they are here or they get the consent of many people. When we look at the challenges of NAPRA, I'm looking at it's fraudulent, exactly what the member from the DA was talking about, that enrollment of people living with HIV on the social security system has been given to medical doctors who at times apply favoritism and solid bribes. Those are concerns of the government. But we need, the Department of Health need to know all those concerns, challenges, because you cannot write something that you don't have you do have maybe something that you can tell us that we do not know. So I want to say that the intention of public hearings, we might not have yes or no answer here, but is to listen to what the people are saying concerning the bill. Therefore, my plea is that we need a chair to invite all the people involved and go through these 14 illnesses. Because really, in some cases, our mothers worked as domestic workers for life, and they became chronic in terms of arthritis because they've been doing washing and ironing. And they sometimes need those because arthritis, maybe it's one of the chronic illnesses. They might need those grants because they can't work anymore now because of being chronic through the work that they do. So that's why I say we need to go through these 14 illnesses, chronic illnesses, as these departments and look at those that we say this must be considered. So I want to say we might not have yes or no answer here, but to write down all the concerns of what the people are raising. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Mlisi, sorry, Honourable Member.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Let me join my colleagues by saying all of us here, if you are not infected, we are affected. I want to call on NAPA. They are saying we support the chronic illnesses grant. What about the opportunist diseases that lead a person to be highly infected? And NAPA, again, according to your presentation, you are encouraging discrimination. And we as the government, we are saying, even if a person has talked about her or his status, we should not discriminate that person because he's positive. And you are saying 1,000 per month. The money is not only for food, but also for transport fee. Did you consider the Department of Health while the minister was talking about this budget? He said, as the Department of Health, we want to bring services closer to the people. And closer to the people, that means people won't need transport to go to get the ARVs. And when you're talking about electricity, we have essential basic needs of our community. If you consider that the government is saying no one should go without water, electricity, sanitation, all of those things. NAPA, you didn't tell us that sometimes we are being funded. We have NAPA at our local levels. So sometimes you are funded, but people are misusing the money at the ground. They don't account for those money. And on page 5 again, you are saying people should be empowered to understand who qualifies so that it is not the doctor, medical assessor. If we don't use a doctor or that medical assessor, how are we going to know that this person is positive or negative? And on that one, the grants encourage teenage pregnancies. There has been argument of an advanced social grant. That grant encourage teenage pregnancies. I think the Minister of Social Development has pronounced herself on this matter that it is not true and that will never be true because it's not for the first time that people are having kids. And 200 is only to assist, not 100% maintain the baby that is born. Thank you, Chair. That is what I wanted to.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mafolo. My apologies for that oversight. Just on page 3 of the submission, SASSA told us that it is government's policy that needs to be amended to allow the inclusion of people living with HIV. HIV in the government, social security, and they supported NAPWA in confronting you. I'm sure you don't want to confront the portfolio committee, but lobby the portfolio committee. In terms of, just a second, the next paragraph is a bit confusing to me. If you could give us just more clarity on what you're trying to say there.
But this is besides the denial by the Department of Social Development. Interestingly, SASA has acknowledged the problem, and they are equally frustrated by the uncaring and inhumane position regarding this. If you could just give us more clarity on what you're saying, because SASA is the implementing agent for the payment of grants and not another Department of Social Development. The other issue that I would like to ask you, which concerns the essence of your submission, are you saying with the submission, because your focus is on the on an alternative grant or another grant, the chronic illness grant. But what are you saying about the amendment bill in front of us? Do you support the definition of disability as in the grant? And also when you look at the other provisions of the bill, the issue of the appeals, do you have any principled objections to the appeal process? The fact that an appeal tribunal is going to be established, and then also the other related issues that goes with them in terms of the purpose of the bill, because I found that not being there in the submission itself. And then in terms of the strain of the submission is, I think the members, Honourable Member Kupane, Mufolo, Kenya, everyone basically, Tuete also touched on the issues of administrative justice vis-a-vis personal responsibility as a citizen that you have, your own responsibility and accountability in terms of your human rights. I think that basically covered my concerns, so it seems if the committee shares those concerns. And just as a matter of interest, if you look at government's new strategy in combating HIV and AIDS, with a CD, I think your CD4 count, everyone should have access to ARVs if your CD count is 400 and less. So that is like a new policy departure. Just what is NAPWA's opinion around that? Honourable Member Tuete.
I'm sorry, Chair. There's something that I want to get clarity on. It is on page 4, NAPWA. It's like this is assisting us on the issue that we're talking about. Because once you say, the topic says negative implications of government stopping social class to people living with HIV. And then bullet number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you are saying government's ARV treatment is not sustainable because most people living with HIV take treatment and put it on their homes and do not take it. You see, it's like exactly what we're saying when we're talking about chronic and disability, that people would be getting this treatment, don't take it, and become disabled. So you're assisting us in that team, because that's what we're saying, most cases, that you might have people that considered to be disability, but because of not taking treatment, they become disabled. So I think, NAPWA, you agree with us. Once you say we're stopping social grants, and whose responsibility is it? If you get treatment, you put it at home, you don't take it, and you become disabled, and there you go and look for social grant, but you've got the HIV, the ARVs at home, you don't take them. Those are the issues that we're talking about, because that's fraudulent. Once you don't take your medication, you put it at home, and it means there's a problem. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to add on what Honourable was saying here. Like one bullet is saying, some PLHIV are subjected to corrupt doctors who are selling medical reports for grants. As this committee, we think it is important for us to get that information so that whenever we are doing our oversight in your centres or wherever, we can have a concrete evidence that these things are happening. And here, we are talking about the deal. There are matters of concern which we feel are here in your document. But the issue and the aim of the public hearing is for us, yourselves and everyone else, to say, do you understand the bill? Do you accept the bill? Where are the areas of concern to power? Just like NAPWA here, just like what you've submitted here. In the first place, the bill itself explains the grants that are offered by the Department of Social Development and their definitions. And it says here, in a disability grant, it's bullet B, if you can go down it. The disability grant can be given to a person if it's owing to a physical or mental disability unfit to obtain by virtue of any service, employment or profession, the means needed to enable him or her to provide for his or her maintenance. Met, if that person has met the prescribed requirements of the means test and the income threshold and attained the prescribed age. Then, I don't know whether we did go through the bill itself. It will assist us, even some members who are going to present, to say, what are we saying about the bill? And then the matters of concern, the issues of concern by the presenters or by the association's hearing. It also gave us something to say. I don't know whether it's the association itself, the body, it's a body, NAPWA. Then down it goes and reaches the grassroots people. But all the departments have the HIV and AIDS budget. Now, we're only focusing on grants. What are all the departments doing with their HIV and AIDS budget to assist NAPWA, to assist the members, to create jobs for those who can work? It comes back to the fact that we have to sit together as sister departments and hear what are they doing, how do they allocate their funds so that they can reach the needy members of NAPWA. And again, this, what are these things, Namad? Your smaller groups down there, the support groups, they're just going up and down, doing nothing, talking about HIV and AIDS. And we feel as this committee, talking about this thing doesn't help us. It's implementation of the programs and projects which will rescue our people. That is just what I want to throw to you, Nanapwa, that what can be done? Sifting our minds from the grant. We know that a grant is a temporal assistance for that particular period. But at the long run, what will happen? You know, I've got one member of yours in my area. The girl was the first person to come out and say, I am infected. You know, she's up and down, she's okay, she's working, she's doing the program, she is healthy. Now we need even all those people from deep rural areas to live like the members that can easily access the funding and all that. And also I want NAPWA to see to it that even if there is a funding for HIV and AIDS in each department, it mustn't be just at national level or at provincial level. It must go down to those people because those are the people who we want to operate those cooperatives and make their living out of them. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Puma. You've digressed a bit into organizational issues. You didn't speak to the submission, but it's fine. Can you ask something else? You just need to respond to the question that I've got.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you for the questions, comments, and suggestions from the Honorable members of the committee. I just want to start by saying, in our presentation, we did not say the social grants are increasing the teenage pregnancy and people infecting themselves with HIV. In our presentation, we were saying it is alleged. That's what we are saying. In fact, we are one of the organizations that were actually dismissing those claims because when we started the campaign for social grants, people would say, no, but grants, they are doing 1, 2, 3. And then we said, no, but you can't prove that scientifically. So we are very happy that the Minister of Social Development is actually speaking our language, is defending us on this issue. But we're saying, even if, let's assume that that was happening, how would you then counteract that? What would be the reason for that to happen? And the reason would be that other people of the community will feel that they are excluded, and then they will try to come up with the things that will make them to also qualify. Which again will go to the question that I think the statement that there are people who are selling the blood in order to get grants. I think we are very happy that today we've got this opportunity to explain this thing. The people do not infect themselves in order to get grants. People, they buy the infected blood. I mean, these are two different things. You are still negative. You go to a doctor. You buy an infected blood. It doesn't mean that you still remain HIV negative. So you did not infect yourself. So that problem then becomes the problem of the people that are the one who's selling and the one who's buying. It does not become an upper problem. So I think it's beyond our control in terms of addressing it. And really it does not disqualify the fact that people living with HIV who are unemployed and poverty-stricken need to be given grants. So I wanted to start with that. Now, coming to the issue of the bill, what is NAPWA's position on the bill? I think, firstly, maybe it's because we've been waiting for an opportunity of this nature for more than 5 or 6 years. Because really, the campaign for social grants, as NAPWA, we started it in as early as 2000. At a time where we were labeled in so many ways, because people then did not realize the importance of nutrition. It's only now that everybody now is saying, hey, what NAPWA was saying in 2000, it has a sense. Now, when then we're called today, I think our entry point to this presentation and hearing was on our constituency. Yes, we understand that it's chronic illness grant. It's not about people living with HIV, it's about everybody who's deserving. But our constituency, and we request the committee to respect that and appreciate that, that our constituency is people living with HIV. And we knew that Black Sash will be here as well, and we will provide the broad technical presentation on the this section, that section, and so on. But in a nutshell, that's why we did not dwell much into the bill, because also we've been communicating, because we agree with the issues and areas and concerns that the BlackSash is raising. For instance, we support the bill as long as it is going to include the issue of chronic illnesses. We're not saying for people living with HIV and AIDS, chronic illness broadly. And we do not support the move of food parcels and vouchers for the reasons that we've already stated, and the BlackSash has stated that if you provide vouchers and food parcels, what happens to the issue of the transport money, electricity, and other issues which were strongly sort of undermined on those? Because government, you see, government will plan. Government has got nice plan. That's all what we say. But delivering services, building a clinic, will take 10 years. But the person who must get a grant and a treatment needs that treatment today. So whilst the government is in the process of providing service delivery, including healthcare facilities, people must be getting assistance. Now, the issue of the CD4 count, that new government is coming up with a new policy, which as NAPA we support, because we are part of SANAC, by the way. Now, a person will get treatment if his or her CD4 count is 350. So as NAPA, we are saying we support that, because it's going to assist people not to get treatment at a stage where it's relatively late. Our call to social development and the committee is that people are getting treatment, concurrently they must be given social grants. So if the CD4 count of is 350 and then you get ARVs, you must then also get social grant concurrently, because we're saying giving ARVs in the absence of nutrition is becomes counterproductive. That's what we're trying to say when we're talking about government treatment program not being sustainable. We're not saying the ARV treatment program is not necessary, it's not important. We fought for that in other organizations. But we're saying once you give people treatment on an empty stomach, if that person takes that treatment is going to be dangerous to the body. And we're saying, and some people, they decide not to take treatment, not because they want to default deliberately, because they don't have food. You can't take a treatment without food. So the issue of social care, that's where, it is helping. Now, there was an issue about the opportunistic diseases. Government talks about a comprehensive treatment and care strategy, which is not just about ARVs. It's also about treating opportunistic infections. And as NAPA, we support that, because we support programs that will ensure that people delay into taking ARVs, meaning that people must remain HIV positive and not progress to AIDS-defining stages. So treatment of opportunistic infection plays a major role there. Even there, nutrition plays a major role, and social grants will then facilitate the accessibility of nutrition, which if you then take nutrition and then basic treatment, you are treating opportunistic infections at a point where you don't need ARVs. The issue of, as if we are discriminating, we are here representing NAPWA. NAPWA, which is an organization of people living with HIV and AIDS. Our entry point will be people living with HIV and AIDS. And that one, I think we must not be apologetic about it. However, when we will be part of a broader formation or coalition for social grants, because we're taking this campaign forward. So we'll be mobilizing and we'll be mobilized by other movements that will be forming a campaign on the issue of this legislation. And then our entry point will be people living with HIV, because we've got a mandate from them. And when we're saying we are suggesting that the money must not be minimum, must not be less than 1,000. We're not saying for people living with HIV and AIDS only. We are saying generally. The issue of the funding, maybe we can start by saying we appreciate the comments by the Honorable Councillors, sorry, members of the committee. Because I think around 2005, the Office of the Deputy of the President set up a task team composed by members of the social cluster. And social development was actually the chairperson, the chairpersonship of that of the social cluster then. Then they were requested to meet with NAPWA and develop a comprehensive strategy of fighting unemployment and poverty among the community of people living with HIV and AIDS. Department of Labor was there, and each department was given clear tasks to say, social development, you'll be providing social grants temporarily while people are being trained by Department of Labor on skills, and then Department of Agriculture will provide land and other implements, and then Department of Trade and Industry will provide. We have a document that is talking about that, because as NAPWA, we provided government with a plan to say social grants is not a permanent issue, because people living with HIV and AIDS are not disabled. We have said that. And social grants, also, they remove human dignity, but we do take them because there is no other option. So we've presented a plan, but the problem with government departments is that, one, in a department, you find that different units in a department, they don't talk to each other. It takes long for units to come together and come up with a strategy. And every day in government departments, things are on the pipeline. And we always ask, how long is this pipeline? So I'm saying that plan will be happy if the portfolio committee can then be able to bring the sort of different government departments around this particular issue. And then the issue of SASSA being equally frustrated, I'm happy that there are SASSA officials here that two years or 3 years back, we've been engaging with them. Because NAPWA has been embarking on Black Easter campaign, Black Christmas campaign, where we'll go more than 20 days without eating, fighting for social grants. And then during those processes, we've then interacted with SASSA and Department of
Health. Could you please wind up your response?
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry about that. I think because the Honorable Chair, the questions were so many and the comments, so I'm responding issue by issue. But the point is, SASSA at one point had agreed that they are the implementing arm. They are not the policy making arm. So the point of call is the department. So let's go to department and try to influence the process of policy change, which is what I think we are doing. And lastly, Honorable Chair, in the issue of funding, and I think one honorable member stated clearly that we are here for the issue of the bill and the social grants. However, in terms of funding, yes, we are funded by Department of Health and by Department of Social Development, and yes, the funding is not for national, it's for provinces to form and run and manage support group. However, the money is not enough. And then on other issues, I would like not to respond. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mese, for your contribution, your organization submission. Honorable members, we have the AIDS Law Project next, and we're not going to break. We're going to push through till 12:30 because we've got some time constraints. The AIDS Law Project is represented by Ms. Alice Kiefer. Is she here?
Honorable Chair, Ella Skippers is not with us today. My name is Umunyana Rujeje, and I have my colleague here, Jonathan Berger. Honorable Chair, we noticed that there's been a lot of discussion around the chronic illnesses, so we will make a few points that are differentiated in our submission, and we'll focus on our second point, which deals with the appeal process. We would like to say that the ALP's position, as has been mentioned by some of the honorable members, we're not saying that all people living with HIV/AIDS are by definition disabled. That is not our position. And it's also not our position that all people living with chronic illnesses such as HIV/AIDS should receive the disability grant. We just would like to clarify that, as is set out in our submission. Just to deal with the key recommendations that we've made in our written submission, firstly, we would like Parliament to provide clarity in respect of the definition of disability, which we say is unclear in the bill. And secondly, to simplify the appeal process by rejecting the amendment as it's set out in the bill. And lastly, to introduce timeframes in the present appeal process that would allow for speedy consideration of appeals in respect of disability grant applications. The reason why we say that the bill does not provide clarity on the issue of who is eligible for a disability grant and who is not is because the definition is quite broad. And in fact, the definition proposed in the bill does not take the position much further than it is at present in the Act and in, yes, in the Act. And because it's not clear, there's confusion both at the level of the administrators who have to consider applications for grants, as well as health practitioners who have to do the assessments as to whether a person should be considered disabled for the purposes of the Social Assistance Act.
So I think the presenter, she's not giving us the presentation from the start. She has highlighted an important point that the parliament, as the committee, we should consider. And I think it's because she don't want to repeat what the others have been saying. Could you please, when she presents, she must give us the pages so that we follow her. Thanks.
Yeah, I think what the minister is saying that this is your written submission. Now, what the other presenters, they spoke to the written submission. But maybe just take the committee members along in the submission. I'm not saying that you should read it in the committee, but when you go to paragraph, you can just alert us to it, and when you go to page 2, just alert us. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. Yes, I am going through this, considering the time constraints and considering the extensive discussion, and I see that you've all read our submission, and we're happy about that. I'm on page 5. I was just discussing the vagueness and uncertainty that arises out of the definition of disability in the bill. And the concerns that we have relate to the lack of clarity and the fact that if a person is unable to, from the regulations or from the legislation, determine what should be done, then that state of vagueness results in an unconstitutional state. And we refer specifically to the Constitutional Court case of Dawood versus Minister of Home Affairs, which deals with this issue extensively. Also, on page 5, I'd like to discuss briefly the National Strategic Plan on HIV/AIDS and STIs. I think that we're all familiar with the NSP and the fact that it raises the issue of people living with disabilities and the fact that they are a particularly vulnerable group, and that there is a double stigma if those people are also living with HIV/AIDS in their communities, in the employment sphere, and in interactions with the state. But of course, if we have clarity on who is eligible and who is not eligible for these grants, and if these particularly vulnerable categories of people are receiving the social assistance that they require, they will be able to build themselves up in a dignified manner and be able to re-enter the employment sphere, re-enter the labor market, and fall off social assistance altogether, leaving room to assist other people. And so we don't have a constant growing of people who require social assistance rather than reducing that number through this grant process. I would also like to point out in the NSP, I'm at the bottom of page 5, that in Chapter 12, the SANAC, the South African National AIDS Council, recommends a chronic illnesses grant for the reasons I've just outlined and for the reasons that have been discussed already. And also, the NSP requires not only chronic illness grant, but also the effective implementation of such a grant. And this fits into the larger role that SANAC plays in the country, which is to reduce the number of people living with HIV/AIDS and to reduce the burden on the economy. Honourable members, Honourable Chair, I'd like to move on to our second issue, which begins on page 7. I just would like to make one more point on chronic illnesses. On the top of page 7, we make the point that the people who currently are receiving disability grants who are living with chronic illnesses may or may not fall off the social assistance net, depending on how this bill goes forward and what the definition is and the understanding of who is eligible and who is not eligible for this grant. And we're greatly concerned, as I know the committee is, about those people who will no longer receive assistance but who clearly require social assistance in order to survive, even though they may not qualify for this particular grant. And those people surely must be considered and supported in whatever way is possible, either through a chronic illness grant or through another legislative process. Honourable Chair, I'd like to now move on to my second issue, which is the appeal procedure, in the middle of page 7. I would just like to start by outlining what the current procedure is for a person who receives an adverse decision from SASSA and who would like to take the matter forward. After SASSA makes its decision and communicates that decision to the applicant, the applicant then has 90 days in which to apply to the minister for a reconsideration of SASO's decision. This is an appeal, and it's currently the only appeal. The bill introduces a preliminary step in the appeal process, which is to approach SASA after receiving an adverse decision and request that the decision be reconsidered. And only once that procedure has taken place would the applicant then be in a position to approach the minister and appeal SASA's decision. In terms of the current act, the minister can either consider the appeal or appoint a tribunal to consider the appeal. In the present circumstances, the minister has appointed several tribunals, and those tribunals consider each appeal in three stages. The first stage is pre-adjudication, where a lawyer and a doctor consider the appeal. The second stage is the adjudication stage, wherein the applicant is invited to make representations as to why they should in fact receive a disability grant. And the third stage is the post-adjudication stage, and our understanding is that this is more of a quality control stage where the decision is considered again by lawyers and doctors. The tribunal at that stage will inform the minister of the decision. The minister then informs the applicant of the outcome, and then at that stage it's a final decision that can then be reviewed by the High Court. That is the present position. Our concern with this appeal is that it simply takes too long. People who are applying for these disability grants, as has been said many times by the committee members, are desperate. They are living in dire socioeconomic conditions. Many of them are ill. Many of them cannot work. And they're forced to go through a process that takes months and months and months and often requires many visits to the various administrative offices. So our concern, having that background in mind, is that introducing an additional stage in an appeal process wherein SASA is asked to reconsider their own decision does not address the issue of the serious backlogs in the appeal process at this stage, which probably has been mentioned already, is standing at about 47,000 applications. And those applications, it's likely, will only be dealt with within 2 years, over the period of 2 years. And so our concern is that given the lengthy time delays that are already in the process, adding an additional process that will firstly require an applicant, will give an applicant 90 days in which to raise this reconsideration, and then giving SASA an indefinite period to consider this reconsideration will result in interminable delays. There's also, our concern also is that there are no time frames within which the decision has to be made by SASA, within which the decision should be communicated to the applicant, and within which the minister must decide on which route to take. Our view is that the period at present of an applicant waiting between 7 and 18 months to get an outcome on the appeal application is too lengthy, and in fact impacts on those applicants' rights to just administrative action, and also impacts on their right to social assistance for which they may be eligible. our recommendations. Our recommendations are on page 10 on this issue. And our recommendation is on the appeal procedure is that the problematic situation at SASA of delay of backlogs and delays should be streamlined so that it's more of a speedy and simple procedure that addresses people's applications timeously. And as I've just said, these timelines, these time frames within which decisions must be made is an integral part of the applicant's rights to just administrative action. And our suggestion in terms of time frames, given the Constitution, the Supreme Court of Appeals consideration of disability grants and the time frames within which decisions should be made, our suggestion would be 90 days. Within which administrators should produce their decision and forward those decisions to the applicants so that they can then respond in whichever way they feel is necessary. Honorable Chair, In our written submission, we included several questions which we think are pertinent for the committee to consider. I'd just like to go through those. This is on page 11. It would be useful to address these questions in order to take account of our concerns both on the issue of the definition and the appeal process. The first question is, does the definition of disability include persons living with chronic illnesses? The second is, if they are not included and no longer qualify for the disability grant, will they receive any other form of social assistance? Thirdly, what is the Department of Social Development's position on the chronic illnesses grant? Fourthly, what is the budget for and the cost of the whole appeal procedure? Fifthly, what is the envisaged role of the Department of Social Development in the appeal process once SASA has reconsidered its own decision? Sixthly, what is the role of SASA in the appeal process? And seventh, what is the role of SASA and DSD in relation to the tribunal? And lastly, what are the powers and functions of the tribunal, and in terms of what rules does the tribunal operate? Madam Chair, that's the end of our oral submission.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rahuhe. Rahuhe, am I right? Yeah, Rahuhe. Honorable members, any questions? Honorable members.
Maybe we're quiet because it seems like most submissions are looking at the inclusion of chronic diseases. And also the questions that you ask on page 11, most of them are issues that we discussed in the previous submissions, like Black Sash and NAPWA. That's why we're still thinking, Chair, that it will sound like we are going to, like a CD with a crack, that we're going to say same things, and those of the questions that you ask here, what is the Department of Social Development's position on the chronic illnesses grant? And that is clearly what we said in the previous submissions, but it is not the issue of
the social development alone as this department. It's an issue of the other departments like Department of Health, Department of Justice, Department of Labor. And also the ministerial committee must also look at it. And intergovernmental committees should also look at it. It can't be the issue of social development issue, as the chair has already said, that really, when you look at this definition of disability, whether we as this committee like it or not, it's something that we need to come together as these departments and raise the concerns of the submissions that you've made. And my feeling is that some of the issues that you raise, like issues that were raised by NAPWA, the doctors that getting bribes for the grants, are issues of all of us. We need to look at that as these departments, as Department of Health. So that's why, Chair, it will be like we're saying the same things in all submissions, because I see that in most submissions, their concern is inclusion of chronic illnesses in the bill. So it means that really it's quite a serious matter that we need to look at. Thank you, Chair.
Anyone else? Just on page 8 of your submission, it says if you look at the proposed amendment, what, if you look at your second sentence, at present, these appeals are not decided in a reasonable period. What is your understanding of a reasonable period? If you look at what you are saying in the next line, that the average period for a decision on appeal is between 7 to 18 months.
We did consider some of the case law that looks at what is a reasonable period within which an administrator can be expected to make a decision. And I would refer to page 10, in the middle of page 10, where we give some factors, A to D. These factors come from a Supreme Court of Appeal case dealing with social grants and in particular time periods. I'll just read from it. What constitutes a reasonable time for an administrator to process an application for social assistance depends on, amongst other things, the nature of the particular application, the inquiries that need to be made, the volume of similar applications that need to be dealt with, and the administrative capacity that is available for processing of these applications. The Supreme Court of Appeal, having regard to those factors, and also to the particular facts of the case, which are not unique to this particular applicant, recommended that a period of 3 months was a reasonable time in which a disability grant should be finalized, one way or the other. We align ourselves with the judge's comments in this regard, and we also recommend a period of 90 days or 3 months. We think that that is a reasonable period. Any other questions from Linda?
We would like to, sorry?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to address some of the other questions and comments that were made. I think, certainly we we support what we're hearing from the committee, that it is important to bring other departments and other portfolio committees into this discussion, particularly insofar as it deals with the question of a chronic disease grant. I think what we're adding to this discussion is specifically looking at the definition of disability and saying that different people looking at the proposed amendment, which inserts the definition into Section 1, different administrators may come to very different conclusions. And what we also do is we add to whether or not a particular person with one or other chronic disease would qualify for a disability grant. That level of discretion is what we find to be disconcerting, and it would result in unequal application of the law, would result in some people getting grants where they're not eligible, which also result in people not getting grants where they are eligible. And our understanding is that the vagueness which is currently in the law, which we do not believe the proposed definition would address, is in large part responsible for too many appeals going up to the tribunal. And so it deals with both of the concerns that we have, both having a definition that is very clear and that leaves very little room for an administrator to apply discretion, as well as dealing with the streamlining of the appeal process. The two go hand in hand together. Just one last point on bringing in other government departments. I think my colleague spoke about the development of the National Strategic Plan on HIV and AIDS and STIs, which took place the end of 2006, early 2007. And I think there are two points I'd like to make in respect of that. The first is that was a process done, as my colleague said, under the auspices of SANAC, which includes at the SANAC at the plenary level, and this is the plenary level which endorsed the National Strategic Plan, the Interministerial Committee on AIDS. So many of the government departments that we are talking about, whether it's health or social development, are part of SANAC and were part of that discussion. I think the second point is that while it was a plan that was developed under the auspices of SANAC, it was in early May of 2007 a plan that was adopted by Cabinet. So it's not a SANAC plan, it's a Cabinet-approved plan. And in terms of that, the comprehensive response to HIV is implemented by government departments and by civil society sectors across the board. So I think the fact that Cabinet gave this the endorsement to the plan, which talks about the need for a chronic disease grant, is important. The final point I want to make on that is that in reference, the reference to a chronic disease grant, and this is at the bottom of page 5 of our submission, the reference to a chronic disease grant is made in Chapter 12 of the NSP. And for those familiar with the NSP, Chapter 12 is a very interesting and important section, a chapter of the NSP, which deals with effective implementation of the plan. And essentially what that chapter is saying in relation to a chronic disease grant, and this echoes what many of the other submissions said before us, the NAPWA submission, the Black Sash submission, is that a chronic disease grant is important as to enable South Africa as a country to tackle HIV and TB, and that it's an integral part of a comprehensive response to dealing with HIV and AIDS. I think I'll leave it at that.
At this stage, we would like to thank the AIDS Law Project for the submission. I just saw a hand, the legal advisor from the department.
I know that I'm not allowed to be asking questions, but I thought I needed, the question around the vagueness of the definition of disability has been raised sharply in both the oral and the written submission. I thought it would be helpful, Chair, that AIDS Law Project should have suggested a definition that they consider to be precise, so that as we go and consider their inputs in our response, we are able to consider that definition that they consider to be precise. Thank you, Chair.
I think if you look at the last two pages there, NHL 1, could you just explain to us that those initials? Is it in a way referring to what the legal advisor from the department is saying?
Yes,
Chair, thank you for that question. Two points on this. Firstly, I think if the committee would allow us, we could certainly, within a couple of days, come back to the committee with a proposed definition. The second point, what we tried to do in our submission was to point to other pieces of legislation passed by Parliament and regulations and codes of good practice to give effect to that legislation to show that it is possible. We gave the annexure talks about the code of good practice, key aspects on the employment of people with disabilities, and that's in under the Employment Equity Act. Certainly there is great detail when one looks at the definition of disability under COIDA. And what we're not saying merely take a definition from one of those acts and apply it here because the circumstances might be different. But what we are saying is that it is possible to provide a definition of disability that is much more detailed and one which then does not allow for a great variance in the decisions that are taken by administrators at SASA. So if the committee would give us that opportunity, we can certainly within the next 2 days work on a definition and send that through to the committee secretary.
If you could send us it through, we'd really appreciate it. More project for your submission. Since there is no other organizations here today, we will adjourn this meeting for now until tomorrow. Thank you.